Hi, this is Dolph Lundgren, and you're listening to Life Minute.
You probably know him from his iconic roles in classics Rocky IV, Masters of the Universe, and his recent blockbuster Expendables. But actor, filmmaker, and martial artist Dolph Lundgren didn't set up to be in show business. The Swedish-born star was actually a chemical engineer, but after a chance encounter with Andy Warhol, he broke into the modeling world and later landed his first role in the James Bond film A View to a Kill. His latest endeavor, launching his own liquor brand, Hard Cut Vodka. He stopped by the Life Minute Studios for some good cocktails and conversation. This is a Life Minute with Dolph Lundgren. Dolph Lundgren in the house, woohoo!
Hey.
Thanks for joining us in Life Minute. Love having you here.
Thank you, my pleasure.
So, you know, I want you to take me, you have a new vodka out, first of all, of course, but I want you to take me through your journey. You've had an interesting start, interesting career.
Yes, interesting life, maybe.
Interesting life. Yeah, right, whole life.
Well, where do I start? I mean, I was born in Sweden, and my dad was an engineer, and my older brother was an engineer, and my other brother was an engineer. So I decided to become a chemical engineer. I studied all over the world, in America a few times, Australia, and I was going to come back here and go to MIT. I had a Fulbright scholarship, which was a lot of hard work for me to get. At the same time, I was a martial artist as well. Started when I was a young kid, like 14 or so, karate. I had a hard relationship with my dad. He was a tough guy, kind of physically kind of hard on me, a bit abusive. So that kind of led me to search out a combat sport, as many young men do that grow up like that. Where you end up in the military, end up, you know, being a boxer or football or something. So I ended up doing martial arts to try to feel more powerful, not to feel so insecure, like I could defend myself. So I did the parallel sort of unusual paths of martial arts and full contact fighting and chemical engineering. So where was I going to end up? I didn't really know. I didn't really want to be a chemical engineer. I always knew that I wanted to use it to be able to travel, to be able to come to America, because I always wanted to come here since I was a little kid. But I couldn't afford to travel, so I needed scholarships. So that's why I used chemical engineering. I was doing some security work in Australia. I was studying at the University of Sydney, and one of the acts I was working for was Grace Jones. She was a famous singer back in the 80s, and, you know, I ended up getting to know her, and actually really well. We ended up being romantically involved, and I came back, moved to Manhattan with her in the early 80s on my way to MIT, and ended up going to 54, and, you know, some little guy came up with an Instamatic camera and took a picture of me and said, "Hey, what are you famous for?" And I'm like, "Nothing, as far as I know." And he says, "I'll put you in my magazine." And it was Andy Warhol, you know. So ended up kind of pursuing a bit of a modeling career and acting. And pretty soon I decided to give up chemical engineering and give acting a shot. I always did a little acting when I was younger as well. My first film, I was with Grace. We were in France. She was the bad girl in the Bond movie with Chris Walken. So I saw him work, which is cool. I was watching him. I was doing some acting at the time. I'd start studying acting, so I watched him work, you know. And he was really interesting because he would rehearse with this British stage actor who always plays. He always used to play the KGB colonel, you know. Yes, he always spoke, you know, to Bond, Mr. Bond. He was the Russian guy. And then Walken would rehearse with him one way, and then on the first take he would do a 180, like if he spoke very softly in the rehearsal, then he would yell at the guy, and the guy jumped back like a half foot, you know, like it was really great. So he was in the moment, like he would elicit a reaction out of him. But anyway, I was on set watching, and the director said, "Oh, there's this guy, the stunt guy didn't show up, you know, so we need one more kind of bad guy who works for the Russian, you know, and do you want to do it?" And I was like, "I don't know, I'm going to mess it up, you know, it's like a big movie, Bond movie." I said, no, here, you know, you put the suit on and you get a gun, you point it at Chris Walken over there, and I ended up being in the movie, you know. But when you watch the credits, my name shows up like 3 minutes later at the end somewhere. But it was cool. It went well. And he said, John Glenn was the director. He said, "Ah, you did a very good job, you know. Perhaps you could be in the pictures, you know." I always remember Roger Moore. He was a very nice man. And, you know, he would arrive in his Bentley. You know, he was like James Bond, like before. He was James Bond in real life. So he'd show up in his Bentley with his driver. And then he would smoke his lunch. He would take a break, smoke a cigar. You know, back in those days, you could smoke cigars in the restaurant. And I sat with him once, and he was like, for some reason, he said, "Dolph is larger than Denmark." That was his sort of, it's like, where did that come from? Anyway, so it was a good experience. And 2 years later, one movie I was up for was a boxing movie. Turned out to be Rocky IV, which was a, turned out to be a big hit. I'd met Sly Stallone and, you know, and moved to Hollywood. And before I knew it, I was, you know, kind of a movie star without really knowing what I was doing and what was going on. It happened extremely quickly and took me years to recover. But basically, that was my new path. And, you know, I've been doing that ever since. So, yeah. There's been a few other turns in the road since then, but that was how it all started.
What's Sly like?
He's a very smart guy, very talented, creative, tough. He was, you know, obviously a big star at the time. And I'd seen Rocky III when I was in Australia. I was, you know, fighting there. I was competing. And I listened to Eye of the Tiger to get fired up. And then little did I know I was going to be in the next one. But he was a great guy, a very good kind of a role model to me. And, you know, I kind of watched him, the way he was directing and producing and acting at the same time, which I ended up doing myself later. It was tough because he was my boss, but he was also my sparring partner. And when you do movie fighting, you have to get kind of close, but you can't hit the other person. So if I didn't get close, did not get close enough, he got upset. You know, you're closer. And if I, of course, nicked him a little bit, he got really upset too. We'll fire your ass if you do that again. So I was this young kid. I was, you know, kind of every sparring session we did it for 6 months, you know, twice a day. Weights in the morning, boxing in the afternoon. So it was a tough school, but I came out okay. And we're still friends, so. We've done 6 movies together.
Wow, yeah. And then I saw when you were young, too, you had allergies, so you weren't really into sports when you were little.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I had a tough childhood in that respect. I mean, I think we all do, but I was not very physical. I had allergies. My dad was, like I said, he was a very smart man and great looking, but he had a lot of issues, you know, I think from his childhood. He grew up during the Depression, and I think, you know, when he grew up, you know, all the kids were beaten by their parents or in school, you know, the teachers were allowed to beat the kids, you know. So I think he probably had some kind of trauma and he kind of took it out on me. So I had his abuse and he also beat my mom up. She was a great woman, really very sweet and kind, but didn't really, you know, with women either, if they're abused, either they'll pick up and go immediately, you know, take the kid and split, but she didn't. So I think it was a complex relationship for me because I had a mother who didn't really protect me, but I loved her, you know, and then I had this kind of abusive father. I mean, it wasn't like my childhood was all, it was hell. It wasn't that bad, but I did develop kind of a toughness, I think, mental and physical toughness. That came in very handy when I became a fighter, and also later in the business, in show business, you know.
Did your parents see you become famous?
Yes, my parents did see me become famous, and it was great. You know, my dad, I remember him, I remember one event when he was in London. He had had some surgery, and my mom was there with him, and I was on the Good Morning Britain show, you know, and they were watching me on TV, and they were very proud. And by then, he kind of forgotten what had happened when I was a kid, and we never talked about it. And I forgave him, you know, because I realized that he had a rough childhood, and some people were mean to him, I think, when he was a kid, when he was just a little kid, too. As they say, you know, we're victims of victims sometimes. So, it was great that they got to experience that, and I took my mom to Wimbledon 1 year, bought her some Bulgari jewelry and Bulgari watch. We watched the finals, and she was kind of, she sort of couldn't believe it. She was a bit sort of overwhelmed by everything, but it's great for me to be able to do it to her, for her, you know?
Oh, that's beautiful, wonderful. Black belt in karate. So that obviously helped you in the Rocky movies.
The black belt. The black belt helped me a lot. Obviously, my first role, I played a fighter, so I was used to moving, and I was very had a lot of agility for a big guy, you know, which Stallone, of course, used that, because you can't teach a person to fight. You know, it takes years. So you can have an actor, you can teach them a little bit, but this is back in the 80s where it was impossible to double you when you're, you know, bare-chested in the ring. You know, everybody could see who it is. So Stallone did his fighting and I did mine. So I think that came in very handy. I think the black belt also gave me a sort of a bit of a spiritual lift when I was a kid. Zen Buddhism, it's like a philosophy of inner calm and control and respect, which has been useful for me in my life, in business and in private life as well.
I love it. It's great. So vodka, why vodka?
I was born in Sweden, and in Sweden people drink a lot of liquor. You know, it's dark up there, and traditionally it's called the vodka belt, which is Russia, Scandinavia, Northern England, even up in Canada and Northern America, people drink more, you know, because of the weather, I think. So I kind of grew up with drinking liquor, usually straight over ice. And they have a lot of great aquavits and such in Sweden. My wife, she's from Norway, but I was dating her, and we were in Santa Barbara in California, and I was complaining about all the vodkas because they were too harsh. I couldn't drink them straight. And she said, well, maybe you should make your own. You know, you're a chemical engineer. You right. played a Russian. You're from Sweden.
She's smart.
And it was a cool idea. And I sometimes wish I would have said no, because it's been a lot of work. But I did take her up on it. And I realized that vodka hadn't really been kind of exploited lately. It sort of hadn't been used as a new vodka brand. It wasn't anything exciting I could see behind the bar. I saw a lot of tequila brands that, you know, lately that were developed, and whiskey, but I thought vodka is kind of interesting. So I started doing more research, and we started trying a lot of different vodkas and try to determine what kind of vodka do we like. And we tried about 30, 40 different vodkas, and finally we realized potato vodka is smoother and kind of creamier. So we ended up finding one in America, which turned out to be a great, great idea. It was just by chance, Richard, the one we liked the best from Idaho. Yeah, I thought vodka, it was kind of a challenge to create a brand and be an entrepreneur. And I haven't done anything like that. I've only worked in the movie business, you know. There was a lot to learn. I mean, it turned out to be a very slightly complicated business, or let's say it's quite difficult to have a liquor brand, because every state has different rules. So you need the permits, so you need to think about a lot of things as you develop it. But it's turned out to be something me and Emma, she's my wife, we've done together on a daily basis. Gives us something to work on together, and to kind of, it's almost like it's our child or something, and our kid, who we're kind of slowly over 6 years have kind of brought up this brand called Hard Cut Vodka. We wanted it to be a cool brand and kind of cool name, a bit fashionable, a little cinematic, but also for it to taste very, very good and be smooth. And we both hate harsh tasting liquor, so we try to make it very smooth, which I think we've done. I'll show you later.
We're going to try it later. We're going to make some recipes. What's your favorite way to drink it?
I got a few favorite ways. Obviously, the best way to discover it initially would be straight over ice, with no lemon, nothing, just the liquor itself chilled. I think the second favorite is a 5-to-1 martini. So it's 5 parts vodka, 1 part of vermouth, stirred, not shaken. Mr. Bond was wrong. It was not shaken, not stirred. It's just stirred, not shaken, 45 seconds with 3 Italian olives. That's kind of savory, and a smooth martini. I like that one too.
We're going to do an espresso, I believe.
Oh, espresso martini is great, too. Yeah,
you know, thanks. It's the day here, so.
Yeah.
Let's put a little coffee in there. Awesome. And potato vodka is pretty rare, isn't it?
Potato vodka is pretty rare, especially in America. I think only about 1% of all vodka is made here. They use potatoes, which you wouldn't believe that. I mean, I assumed that potato was a very common raw material, but it isn't. Mostly it's wheat and grain. There's some corn vodkas. There are wheat vodkas like Belvedere and Grey Goose and Kettle One. Potato is, it's unusual. There was one called Chopin, which is Polish, which is pretty smooth. Also creamy like our vodka. But no, I think potato turned out to be a good choice.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you guys are really hands-on, which is nice. Not just a name on a bottle. You're really...
No, we're involved. I mean, my life now about 80% vodka business and 20% movie business.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool.
It's great to be back in New York, and this is where it all started, you know.
Yes. And you're
years
doing,
ago.
What are you doing? Alcohol conventions? Or
yeah, I'm at the Bar Comment Brooklyn. It's like a beverage and alcohol convention in Brooklyn. It's great. There's a very famous bartender named Dale DeGroff, used to be at the Rainbow Room here at Rockefeller Center, and before that he was at the Bel Air Hotel in California. Anyway, he wrote the book called The Craft of the Cocktail, which is the most famous cocktail book, and I read it twice. So I met him today, and he made a drink with my vodka, and yeah, it was cool.
Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, great. What do you like to do when you're not working or drinking?
Oh, when I'm not working or drinking, well, working out is something I try to do a lot. I try to stay in shape. You know, as we get older, you have to be smart about how you train, and you need a lot of time to recover. I think a lot of things Emma and I do together is just we try to chill out at home and watch TV or just, you know, spend time together, quiet time together, just reading a book or surfing the internet or something, but just resting. Because a lot of times when I do a project, if I'm acting or if I promote the vodka, it's quite intensive. You know, you spend a lot of energy meeting people and pushing a brand. So I think, yeah, going to the beach. We live in Los Angeles, so we can go to the beach once a week, go and work out. We have a gym in our place. I also go to Gold's in Venice, you know, run into Arnold, you know.
Really?
You have to hold it like the old days, Dolphy, remember? So, yeah, I know Arnold since I was in the, before I was in the movie business, I met him. Nice guy.
So you have a gym home, but sure. You still go to Gold's. That's
still
impressive.
Go to Gold's because there's a guy who does physiotherapy there. It's really good. And it's kind of fun to hang with all the old crew and guys I've known for 30 years or so. Yeah, and we try to get back to Scandinavia once or twice a year. Like we're going in a couple of weeks now just to see Emma's parents and my siblings. And it's a, you know, Stockholm, for instance, is a small city compared to New York. You can just get on a bicycle and go around everywhere. And yeah, it's pleasant.
Nice. Favorite comfort food?
A good burger is nice. Burger and fries.
You don't eat a burger and fries.
I do sometimes. I like steak. I like pasta bolognese. Emma makes killer spaghetti bolognese.
Nice. She's a keeper, that one. Favorite music?
I like R&B. Yeah, I like the backbeat, you know, and Latin music too, because I used to play drums. So I,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I used to play drums when I was a teenager, and I did a movie. I directed a movie where I played drummers. Well, kind of die hard in a rock concert. And the drummer, of course, is the badass guy who kind of takes over and saves the day. So I did that. But I like drums. I like anything with a good backbeat to it. So, yeah. R&B is cool.
What do you guys binge? You said you watch TV.
Well, I'm embarrassed to say the last thing we binged was Sex and the City.
Ah, that's what I'm binging right now. I went back to it.
Yeah. We're back to it the second time. I've seen it about four times, and I like it. You know, and it was funny because I was at a restaurant two nights ago with an old friend of mine, Vittoria, who owns a bunch of restaurants in town called Serafina. Nice restaurant, Italian food. And I was there, and And some guys show up, some friends of his, and with them is Chris Noth, you know.
Yes, yes.
Mr. Big.
Yeah.
And I like his character a lot in the series, so, you know, said hi to him, which is fun.
What's something that you want to do you haven't done yet?
I like to take my kids. I have two daughters, 23, 20, 29. I like to take them to Bora Bora one time. I love Tahiti, and I love that island. It's magical. And they always heard about it since they were kids, so I like to take them and my wife and maybe some other friends over there.
Besides your phone, what do you take with you when you travel?
Emma, I should take some vitamins and supplements. Sometimes I take a Theragun. Theragun is a massage. It kind of looks like a, you know what it's like.
I think
like,
I have one.
Yeah.
Vibrates.
Yeah, vibrates. Yeah. It looks like a bit like a hand drill. Yeah.
Yeah.
And usually I take, also sometimes I take a band, like a workout band with me to do different exercises and little warm-ups and stuff.
You have the nicest skin.
I do.
It's like glistening, yeah. Any Thanks. Skin secrets?
Hydration. I think it's all about hydration. You just have to overdo it, I think, as you get older, because your skin gets a little drier and you just got to pour the stuff on there and drink a lot of water. And I think that's important.
Any other acting projects on the horizon?
I'm developing a couple of projects that I'm developing to produce and act in. One is a comedy, action comedy set in L.A., sort of set in the business. I play myself, actually, in that one. And some other films I'm developing. There is a documentary about me coming out later this year about my life. So I'm kind of used to talking about my past and how it all kind of came together. So that should be exciting when that comes out.
Oh, that's great. Biggest life lesson, since this is Life Minute.
It's never too late. Better late than never. You can always change something. You can always learn something new. You can always apologize for something, or you can always forgive yourself, forgive somebody. You know, it's never too late. Never too late to change. I think also in work and training and a lot of things, I think anything is better than nothing. You have to start small. And then you take small steps. What does it say? The journey of 10,000 miles starts with one step. A Chinese proverb. I think also perseverance is a very important quality, you know. I've used it many times when you, in sports, when you, they got to pick you up off the mat and tie the belt on your uniform and push you back in there. You don't know whether you're coming or going, and suddenly you realize the other guy didn't get up and you won, you know. But it always takes more work than you think. So I think that hanging in there and just keep hanging in there, things will kind of work themselves out, usually for the better.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.